Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We continue our coverage of the New Jersey gubernatorial primary now, which is on Tuesday, June 6th. We're inviting every candidate on the Democratic and Republican ballots who are gunning to succeed Chris Christie. And as a reminder, in case you're a New Jersey resident thinking, when do I vote? Maybe because this race hasn't been getting very much press at all, I'll say it again. The primary is on Tuesday, June 6th, just a few weeks away. And by then, we hope to have had every Republican and every Democratic candidate running for the gubernatorial nomination in New Jersey on the show, so at least listeners to WNYC can make an informed decision about who will succeed Chris Christie as he is term limited out. Not that he would have won re-election anyway. And with me now for our fourth candidate interview of this week is Democratic hopeful Bill Brennan. He's an activist and a retired teaneck firefighter from Wayne. He made some campaign news the other day saying he would use the power of pardons as governor to free all nonviolent drug offenders in New Jersey. Hi, Mr. Brennan. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How you doing? Hey, you got to correct you on that. The power of the pardon would be to free them to vote again.
Oh,
Because they're disenfranchised right now based upon a racist war on drugs. So I want to be clear.
Yeah, you're not.
That I'm not going to empty the jails of nonviolent offenders. I'm going to restore the right to vote of nonviolent offenders and other rehabilitated offenders. But I think that's a misnomer there.
Thank you for correcting that. I apologize. Is the law in New Jersey, because I know this goes state by state, that people can vote again after they've served their time, or what's the New Jersey law?
No, it's a permanent forfeiture of your right to vote, and it's unduly restrictive. And again, if you're going to go into the reasons why there are so many people convicted, and then the fact that we're living in an incarceration nation, it's by design. There's an issue there that needs to be dealt with honestly and aggressively.
In New York, even felons, once they've served their time, do get the right to vote back. There's a debate in New York, I believe, over whether during their parole period, whether they should get the right to vote back. Not sure I have that exactly right, but it's something along those lines. But in New Jersey, it's much stricter. You never get the right to vote back if you're a convicted felon.
That's right.
And so you're saying for those who are convicted of non-violent drug offenses, they should get it back after they've served their time, but for nobody else.
No. I think if you've paid your debt to society, then you should be able to vote. You're still going to pay taxes. You're still going to live under the laws of this country. And chances are, if you've been incarcerated and you're a minority, you've been incarcerated unjustly, or at least you've been targeted for prosecution, whereas people in a different cohort are not. And again, it goes back to the 13th Amendment. It goes back to Nixon's war on drugs, which was perpetrated and instigated solely for the purpose of marginalizing the peace-loving hippies who didn't support his war in Vietnam and the African-American and minority community who he was targeting because they're not in the demographic that would vote for conservative Republican what they call values. I call them lack of values.
So, again, just to clarify the news story then, are you calling for restoration of the right to vote for nonviolent drug offenders after they've served their time, or for everybody after they've served their time?
Everybody who has served their time and is free to walk the streets of this country should be free to enter a voting booth and vote.
Okay.
It's an arbitrary restriction on their right. It's just further disenfranchisement that targets a specific demographic.
All right.
It's always the same demographic that loses.
So let's take a step back, since you're one of the lesser-known candidates in the race. Why don't you take a minute or two to introduce yourself in general and tell everybody why you think you would be the best Democratic nominee for governor of New Jersey?
Well, I've spent my lifetime fighting for social justice and environmental issues and just fundamental fairness in life, and I've had tremendous success. I've had some stunning failures, too, but at least I got back up and I kept fighting. And what distinguishes me from the other candidates is, in the first place, I'm earning the respect and admiration of the voters of New Jersey by putting myself out there and speaking truth to power on a regular basis, and I'm not being an opportunist about what I'm up to. This is, I'm running for governor because I'm fighting corruption. I'm not fighting corruption because I'm running for governor. Going further than that, on a specific policy basis, if you go to my website at brennan2017.com and you compare my website to the other websites, you compare my speeches to the other speeches, I answer questions directly and forthrightly. I provide specific details as to how I'm going to solve the pension crisis, as to what I'm going to do with the transportation issues, about how I'm going to deal with lowering property taxes, about how I'm going to get us to 100% renewable energy by the end of my term, which, you know, somebody's going to tell me that's impossible, and I'm going to tell you, no, it's entirely doable if you just have the will to do it and the leadership involved. So when it comes to social justice, when it comes to environmental justice, when it comes to comprehensive fiscal policy, I'm just miles beyond everybody that I'm running against. They're speaking in vagaries and platitudes and instead of offering solutions and programs that they're going to institute.
Listeners, questions from New Jersey for Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Bill Brennan, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Little bit of your activist background. I see last fall you filed a citizen's complaint of official misconduct against Governor Christie for his alleged role in the Bridgegate scandal, but ultimately he wasn't charged. I see you have a history of filing suits against municipal government, including Teaneck, where you were a firefighter. Why do you use that tactic so often?
Well, let me correct you about something else. Chris Christie was charged twice as a consequence of my citizen's complaint. Two judges on four occasions found probable cause to believe that Chris Christie engaged in an act of official misconduct. And what happened after that was the canary in the coal mine that set us up for what's going on with Trump. He was not prosecuted because a prosecutor that works for him, that had no tenure in his office, that could be fired for any reason, no reason, or specifically because he was charging the governor with the crime, or prosecuting the governor with a crime that he had been indicted over, administratively dismissed the charge. And I had made a motion for the appointment of a special prosecutor in that case because it was a clear, obvious, overt, brazen conflict of interest for a prosecutor who works directly for the governor to have to be charged with prosecuting the governor. Now, the judges did their job. The judges found probable cause, and probable cause is the standard that you must meet in order to get an indictment in a criminal matter. So he was essentially indicted by a judge on two occasions. What happened after that is exactly what's happening with Comey. Comey didn't play ball with the Trump administration, and he got fired. These prosecutors knew that Chris Christie would fire them, so they dropped the charges. So he was indicted, he was found probable cause, he was charged, and then the charge was dismissed. If he hadn't been charged, there'd be nothing for them to dismiss. As far as why I use that as a tactic, it's getting more and more difficult to use the administrative remedies and the judicial remedies because they've captured all of the agencies. Remember, the governor appoints every commissioner of every administrative agency. He appoints every judge. He appoints every prosecutor. He appoints every attorney general, every deputy attorney general. He has absolute control over the state of New Jersey, and he's captured the agencies that we used to be able to turn to as checks and balances and enforcers of the laws of this land. And what we have now is a lawlessness in society that is intolerable, and we can't accomplish any of our goals as progressives until we get a fair system running again, and we don't have a fair system at this point.
By the way, I just want to go to that, back to that felons voting question one more time, because a number of people have gotten in touch to say that we were giving incorrect information, and I apologize for whatever my role was in that, but here from a site called nonprofitvote.org, one of the versions of what we're hearing from multiple people, individuals convicted of a felony are ineligible to vote while incarcerated on parole or on probation, but voting rights are automatically restored upon completion of all supervised release. Ex-offenders should re-register to vote. So it sounds like what you were calling for is already the law.
Well, that wasn't the paradigm that was presented to us at the forum. And again, the message that I was bringing at that forum was more based upon the targeting of a particular community for disenfranchisement. And the point of the matter was that the war on drugs and the war on poverty and the war on minorities has substantially interfered with the voting rights of the African-American community. The statistics are as follows. 6% of the American population are African-American men, but 40% of our prisoners are African-American men. 5% of the world's population reside in the United States of America, but 25% of the world's prisoners are in the United States of America. We have a problem with over-incarceration. We have undertaken a war on our own people for decades now, and it's intolerable, completely intolerable to have a war on people who are either sick and addicted and in need of help. And think about what that does. It creates a violent criminal underworld where people are making millions and millions of dollars, and they can't go to law enforcement for protection. So they arm themselves, they protect themselves, and they fight with each other in a violent way. And this is where the drug gangs are coming from. They're not coming from the drug users. And this over enforcement and this over regulation and this over protectiveness on one issue is severely impacting an entire cohort of the population for specific and substantial reasons that have no basis in what's good and sound public policy.
A listener asks, are you pro legalization of recreational marijuana?
I was the first candidate to have that as a point heading on his website, and three other candidates have moved from decriminalization to legalization. And the reason for legalization is obvious. In the first case, the prohibition was based upon lies that were brought about by a lobbyist, the William Randolph Hearst people who had the wood pulp paper industry, and they didn't want to compete with hemp. And now it's being fomented by the private prison industry and the liquor and alcohol industry, and it's lobbyists lying to try and keep people in jail for doing something that is safe, much safer and much less harmful than any number of things that are legal at the federal level. You can engage in prostitution at a federal level. It's not a crime. You can write prescriptions for OxyContin and fentanyl. It's not a crime. You can get involved in gambling, and it's not a crime. You can sell alcohol, and it's not a crime. But growing a plant in your backyard, you can go to jail for years, and that's inappropriate.
Ava in Milford, you're on WNYC with Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Bill Brennan. Hi, Ava.
Hey, Brian. I'm a longtime listener of your show.
Glad you're on.
I'd like to ask the candidate. I am a white-collar working professional living in New Jersey. New Jersey is the number one state in foreclosures in the country, like to the tune of twice as much as any other state, way more than that. I am a hardworking, upper-middle-class person. I am struggling to pay my mortgage. We have had a series of the worst governors in this state, decade after decade after decade. I am sorry, but I do not consider the state of criminals being able to vote as important as working and speaking to the middle class. And P.S., I was at the town hall at Leonard Land, and there's a lot of very pissed off people in New Jersey. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that word. And I would like to know what you are planning to do for the middle class working people in New Jersey that have jobs, that are upstanding citizens, and how are you going to help us with our financial crisis in our state?
I'm happy you asked that question, because I have quite a bit of policy proposals on how we're going to grow the middle class and stimulate our economy. And each of my proposals is looking to incorporate solutions to more than one problem. So raising the minimum wage is one thing it's the rising tide that will lift all boats. Creating an income inequality surcharge on any corporation where the CEO makes 100 times more than the lowest paid employee, either the corporation will pay the 20% surcharge, they will lower the CEO's pay to come within 99-1, or they will raise the people at the bottom. I can anticipate that the one thing they're not going to do is lower the CEO's wages in any event. That doesn't happen. But beyond that, stimulating the economy is the most important thing we can do. So how do we do that and solve more than one problem? Well, we have an infrastructure problem, we have an environmental problem, and we have an economic problem. So All the transportation programs that I'm talking about are a massive stimulus to our economy and create jobs for people who, when they get an extra dollar, they spend their money. When you give a billionaire an extra dollar, he puts it under his mattress or he sends it to the Cayman Islands. When you give a working person a dollar, they spend it and it stimulates the economy. So, for instance, when we rebuild bridges, right now we're building a Goethals Bridge and a Bayonne Bridge and a Tappan Zee Bridge, and they're all over open expanses of water and they have high towers, and there's no wind on those bridges that would power those bridges. So we could have and should have, with the infrastructure that we're building, incorporated renewable energy. Those jobs are good jobs. The marijuana legalization platform that I have, because marijuana is an intrastate product and commodity, because inside the borders of New Jersey are the only place that you can cultivate and sell it, all of these $15 an hour jobs are Jersey jobs. From the seed to the harvest to the packaging to the retail to the baking of baked goods to the factory for candies, all of these jobs are good paying Jersey jobs. And I'm also a proponent of organized labor, and we need to strengthen organized labor. The backbone of our country has always been organized labor, union people united together and negotiating for better terms and conditions. You know, when the price of fuel goes up, the employer doesn't say, well, I'm not going to pay it, so I'm just not going to buy the fuel. But when the price of labor goes up, somehow they feel they don't have to pay for the increase in the price of labor. So between economic stimulus that improves our infrastructure, again, the World Trade Center that we built, that train station, there's no renewable components to that. The bridges that we built, no renewable energy. When I'm governor, the two biggest projects that face New Jersey are billions upon billions of dollars, the Port Authority bus terminal and Penn Station. They will not be separate facilities, and that will save us a tremendous amount of money while creating a number of jobs for New Jersey people. If you put the Port Authority bus terminal above Penn Station instead of out in the middle of nowhere on 11th Avenue, you do two things. You bring the commuters closer to their jobs further east in Manhattan, and you also make it easier for them to transfer to the A, the C, and the E lines on 8th Avenue, the 1, the 2, and the 3 lines on 7th Avenue, because Madison Square Garden is on city-owned property, and their lease is up in 5 years. So we wouldn't need to buy additional property. We wouldn't be taking people further away from their jobs and their commutes, which are already horrendous and getting worse, and we would be able to make a seamless transfer from New Jersey Transit trains to New Jersey Transit buses to the Long Island Railroad to Amtrak to New York City subways and ultimately to the Metro North Railroad, which they should all be together. Remember, these facilities were put in separate places when they were competitors in private industry. Mass transit is now a public function. So we have to stop acting like we're in the 1930s and these are private companies competing for tax dollars, competing for revenue sources. So I hope that gives you a glimpse of where I'm going with what to do with the economy. And the other part of your mortgage is property taxes. And I have a specific and comprehensive proposal for property taxes, which, again, in a synergistic fashion, attacks more than one problem. And our property taxes are the highest in the nation.
You want to give us a very brief version of your property tax reduction proposal?
Yes. Right now, each individual municipality has its own school board. In some cases, they have more than one school board for their high school and their elementary schools. In my opinion, that's a duplication of services that has to stop. Now, everybody wants home rule. However, if the state of New Jersey entirely funded public education instead of relying on property taxes, everybody's property tax bill would be reduced by one-third. And in order to qualify for state funding for your education system, you would have to participate in a countywide school board. That means you get rid of your own superintendent and you have one. New York City has one school's chancellor. So the county of Passaic or the county of Bergen can get by with one superintendent. And that would do something else. It would help us alleviate the disparity between the wealthier towns and the less fortunate towns. Passaic County, New Jersey, has Wayne Township, which is one of the best school systems in the country, and Paterson, New Jersey, which is one of the worst school systems in the country. If we gave students the choice, not charter schools, which I'm entirely opposed to, but public schools and the ability for each of the students within one county to choose and compete to participate in various schools where they have better opportunity, we solve the problem of the disparity in the school systems, and it varies from town to town. We reduce property taxes by one-third, because a third of your property tax bill goes to the school system, and we cut costs because we don't have 42 different school superintendents for one county, which is absurd.
What do you mean by compete to attend any county in the school? How would that in the any school in the county? How would that work?
Well, for instance, if you live in Brooklyn and your elementary school is public school 119, but you find that public school 123 is a better opportunity for you, and you're willing to travel to public school 123, you can apply, and I don't know if these numbers are correct, but what the names of the schools, is, but for example, but you don't have to go to the school that's located closest to your community. It's a New York City school board. It's a New York City school system. So you can go within your district as opposed to where you live geographically. So if the school system is a county school system, you should be able to go to any school in the county based upon whatever criteria we can find that is fair, that will give everybody the opportunity to participate. And again, if some of the schools are deficient and need repairs, and the schools, and ultimately all the teachers are under the same contract, if you have underperforming schools or overperforming schools, you'll have more resources. You'll have one set of faculty for the entire county instead of one for one individual town. I mean, we have towns with 12,000 people that have a school board and a school union, and they negotiate their own contract, and they buy their own books, and they plow their own parking lots with a different contract than the town next door that has 8,000 people in it. And we just can't afford to keep giving everybody their own kingdom. The fiefdoms in New Jersey are difficult. So in my program, there's a carrot and a stick. If you want to keep your home rule, you can do it, but you're going to pay it 33% more in property taxes than your neighbor who went to the county school board.
One more call, and it's going to come full circle. Jeffrey and Summit, you're on WNYC with Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Bill Brennan. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. I heard what you said about the incarceration of nonviolent drug users, the war on drugs, and I couldn't agree more. So let me ask you, why don't you advocate for the pardoning of all nonviolent drug offenders, and why don't you advocate for decriminalization or removing the criminalization and the laws that criminalize nonviolent drug use?
Well, I do advocate for that. It's on my website. Ending the war on drugs is a central feature of my campaign. Perhaps I was inartful in the way I answered the question, but no, those are part of my policy. But as far as taking people that are currently serving their prison term, this is, what is it, 70,000? No, not 70,000. 70,000 are disenfranchised at the moment, and releasing them on a mass scale, I would first seek to have the laws changed. And if I couldn't get the laws changed, if the legislature wouldn't bend to my will and end the war on drugs, then that would be something I would do. But I don't want to come out of the gate without having legislative approval and start pardoning people when I think that we can get the political and social will behind this, the education behind it, to ensure that the people that are sick and the people that are addicted and the people that are caught up in a particular lifestyle that haven't committed violent crimes are stuck in that system.
And you know what? I'm going to have to leave it there, but I'm glad you clarified that, and I'm glad we got to so much. So we will have to leave it there for today. My guest has been our fourth Democratic gubernatorial hopeful this week, Bill Brennan, running for governor of New Jersey, or the Democratic nomination. Again, the primary is Tuesday, June 6th. Retired Teaneck firefighter Bill Brennan, thank you very much for coming on and talking to me and talking to the callers.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Appreciate you taking the time.
And tomorrow we'll continue this series with Democratic hopeful Phil Murphy.